Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
Yes, the Stock Reds. Three beautiful bottles in front of me. Maritana, Terminum, and Secret d'Or. And we're starting with Maritana Larousse.
That's right. Maritana Larousse Pinot Noir 2017. So three vineyards brought together here. And again, because this is a question I'm asked a lot, I really want to make sure I include it. And that is, what is different about this versus the Pats and Hall stuff that I used to be involved with? And I really wanted to try out a couple of things that I felt brought to the table as that Pinot perfume, that character that is so haunting about Pinot Noir that you just can't get from any other grape varieties. And so where I'm looking for developing that Pinot perfume character is by a different type of fermentation with a significant portion of whole cluster. So I'm using about a third whole cluster this year. So clusters go directly into the fermenter. The remaining two-thirds are destemmed and then go into the fermenter. And the reason I'm being technical about this is to clarify what I mean. Literally, don't do anything to the clusters. You don't strip the grapes off. You put the stem and the whole thing right into the fermenter. And why does this make more perfumey character is an interesting question. It probably is some combination of the way that fermentation happens inside a grape that's whole versus one that's crushed, and probably something to do with the stems themselves. This isn't something where there's a lot of scientific evidence or methodology behind it. It's experiential. You can taste and smell it. It tastes and smells different. I'm prepared to change my thoughts on this if there's actually at some point in the future scientific proof or a methodology that's tried and true and that can be replicated. That's fine. But what I've been experiencing is that this whole cluster thing really has brought out that perfumey character. So I've increased it for 2018 up to 50%, and I think that it's working beautifully. The second part is where, at Pats and Hall, we would use, 30 to 40% new barrels. I actually like the impact of new barrels on red wine a lot. And so I'm using a significant amount here of new barrels, probably 75% in 2017.
I was still in the haunting part. I'm making a blonde joke here. For those of you that haven't seen my picture, I happen to be a blonde. Really everything you said is highly instructive. I think there's quite a bit of confusion around the stem inclusion, the whole bunch fermentation. What you just very eloquently explained makes a ton of sense. This wine has so much structure, texture, depth of flavor. Do you attribute it in large part to this treatment?
Okay, well, now we're going to start a different conversation, which is, which is more important, place or process? And I think both are important. In this particular case, the Russian River character is really coming through. There's nice acidity and focus, and there's this delicacy that's tricky to get with Pinot Noir, even in Burgundy, let alone in California. And those are the things I've been looking for and really want to pursue. But I think that a portion of this characteristic is coming from the vineyard, and a portion of it is coming from the method that we're using for fermenting to bring it out. If it's strictly a winemaking trick, then it's less interesting to me than it is if it's something that comes from the characteristics of the vineyard as well.
It's very earthy. The aromatics are so deep, like you just want to keep putting your nose back in there repeatedly, because every time I do, I get a different.
Yeah. So my goal with making Pinot Noir, this is my ultimate goal. I want to make a wine, when people smell it, they think, there's this thought flickers through the back of their mind. This smells so good that maybe I won't actually drink it. I'll just keep sniffing it until it evaporates. That's what I want.
Well, you almost succeeded, but no, I don't have
not quite
that
there
kind
yet.
Of self-discipline. I'm so tasting this.
It. Yeah.
No, absolutely not. I'm refusing not to put it.
Well, this is lovely. This is really lovely. And I'm happy with the 2017, but for a couple of reasons, the vineyards went away for between 2017 and 2018. And that was okay. And I went out on the hunt for looking for even better sources for 2018, and I have found them. I have some really extraordinary stuff coming in for 2018. And it will redo this LaRousse Pinot Noir project entirely.
I love how you're celebrating Russian River Valley. None of us are supposed to be biased, and yet all of us are. Russian River Valley happens to be, I wouldn't say the favorite, because I love Sonoma Coast, but certainly right up there. I instinctually, from the first wines that I've tasted, discovered that it just aligns with my palate. The best examples of Pinots from Russian River Valley just make me smile from ear to ear. And what you've achieved here is a true celebration of that region.
I love the Russian River. I mean, it's really an easy place to love. It's beautiful. It's, you know, it's got the river, of course, but it's also got hillsides and, you know, rolling pasture land and all kinds of apple orchards. All these things are kind of all caught up in the Russian River. And it's such a intriguing area. It's kind of hard not to fall in love with it if you start buying grapes and making wine from it. It's just an amazing place.
Again, I mean, for you to single out just one region from Sonoma County where you've spent so much of your time, that says a lot.
Well, Sonoma Coast is great. I like Sonoma Coast. It's not, there's nothing wrong with that. And there's other parts of Sonoma that are equally intriguing. But at some point, you have to draw lines and say, this is what I can do, and that is just too big an undertaking to take on all by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than running all over Sonoma County, I can focus in on a smaller area that I love anyway. So it all works out great that way.
Excellent. Well, this is quite a treat. And again, I'm starting to sound like a broken record, but this is an ager. I don't know if it'll outlast me, and that's not the important part, but it's built. You can certainly enjoy it now and be very happy. And you can also lay it down for a long time. And ideally, I mean, I don't know how you feel about that, but I always suggest when you love the wine, please don't buy a single bottle. Do yourself a favor, get three. At least
that's
two.
That's hilarious. I used to buy three, and my personal joke about buying three was I drink one too young, one too old, and then not know what to do with the last bottle. So, but three is a great number, and if you're up to date in your cellar, it's a great spot. But you know, if you can afford to buy more, of course, because it's really a treat to see these wines develop over time. A lot of people will ask me, how long will this? And then they'll point to one wine. How long will this last? Or when is it going to be drinking its best? And it becomes a very complicated question, because part of it revolves around what you like. I mean, if you don't like the taste of older wine, and you should probably check this out before you invest tens of thousands of dollars in wine that's aging in some cellar someplace. If you're not a big fan of the taste of older wines, then probably you shouldn't do it. But if you do like the taste, then you have to have perfect storage. If you don't have perfect storage, then you're just playing Russian roulette with bottles. That's not very useful either. And if you like the taste and have perfect storage, then I think this wine will surprise you, probably 15 to 20 years. I just had the 95 Patson Hall, which was our first vintage, and I was shocked at how good it was. And it was not a wine as good as this when we released it. I got better fruit for the 2017 Maritana than we did in 1995. So I'm very confident that this wine, if properly stored and you like the taste of older wine, will be thrilling.
I highly recommend that You buy a minimum of two, but really three is a...
Three cases.
No, it's the kind of wine that I think will reward you very, very generously down the line, as fun as it is to taste when it's young.
Then we go to the the real baby on the table right now, is the 2017 Terminum Syrah. This just was bottled last week. No, not last week. The week before last. A week ago Thursday. And it's right now, it's not showing everything, but it's been open for a little while now, and I've been working it in my glass. It's starting to wake up just a little bit. It needs another couple of weeks. It's not really officially released until May anyway. I think it's going to start to get its, you know, develop or reveal what it has to show anyway. By the beginning of May, probably end of summer, it'll be starting to really strut. But this is that wine that I made with Francois Villard, and Francois was so worried about it being over-extracted. So this clearly is not over-extracted. It's very light on its feet. It's beautifully dark in color, but and has great concentration of flavor and underlying acidity that makes it fresh. But wow, I'm just really digging the nose. It's got all of that thing that Syrah really is noted for, this sort of earth character, but also kind of a lavender character to the aromas. And
I don't believe I've ever used that term before. It's absolutely honest truth. Gobsmacked. I think it's my recent New Zealand trip that brought that on. But literally, when I stuck my nose on the glass, it's the what you described as violets. And some of the really exquisite black fruits, they were so powerful.
It's interesting, especially when you get it into the mouth, because there's a nice amount of tannin that says, I'm a young wine.
Oh, God,
and
yeah.
I want some bottle aging before I really show everything. But it's
like
lovely.
Like lilacs, you know, like when they're blooming. And you walk by, it's like, my God, you're overwhelmed almost, right? Because
exactly.
It's so beautiful. Wow, that wine has so much personality. And yes, on the palate, it's definitely restrained. And without a doubt, it's a young wine. But I'm sorry, but who cares? I want to drink it.
Well, it's great with pizza. I just tried it the other night.
We could wax poetic all day, but that is such a pleasurable wine.
I've said this a lot of times before, probably, and not on our little discussion today, but ultimately wine is about pleasure. And so if you don't derive pleasure from the experience, then the discussion about how the wine was made or where it came from or how fancy the location is or all of that is an excuse for why it didn't do its initial function, which is to deliver pleasure.
Yeah, the academic part of it is that I truly believe with every sip that this wine, like Larousse, will perform so wonderfully in the cellar and show different kaleidoscope. I'm sure that every bottle you open would show you a different composition.
Someday I'm going to wish I had 1,000 cases of this, but I'm really glad I only have about 120 cases of it right now, because it's a tricky... It's tricky to get people to try Syrah from California, let alone wine from Mendocino County, kind of out in the middle of nowhere. But this is a mountainside site. So the lowest vines on this are at 2,500 feet. And the highest vines, actually the tallest vines on the vineyard, are going into the Terminum Cépage d'Or. The Marsan and Roussan are planted at almost 3,000 feet.
There's a lifted quality to this that, even though I know I'm tasting Syrah in this case, it's unmistakable, but there's a level of refinement and elegance that's very instructive. So what you've achieved here is, in fact, quite significant, because Syrah, in its best iteration, is something that delivers a ton of fruit and a ton of presence, but it doesn't overwhelm you.
Yeah, it's interesting because, as I said, Francois Villard is from the Northern Rhone Valley. A lot of times people hear the word Côte Rôti and they understand it means roasted hill. Yeah. And they assume that it's a really hot spot to grow.
Yeah.
It sounds like it should be, right? Roasted hill. But in fact, it's a relatively cool area.
Yeah.
It's far enough up the Rhone Valley so that it gets a lot of influences off the Alps. And it, at least that's my understanding. And the end resulting wines from Côte Rôtie tend to be much more focused on complexity and subtlety rather than raw power. So I'm thrilled that this wine has turned out to have some of that signature, as well as flavors that remind me distinctly of California, because yeah. It's a California wine. I've said this before elsewhere as well, but not on this. And I kind of felt like I was, you know, the chef from Ratatouille when we were making this, because I had no idea how to make Syrah, and I had no pretensions that I was a professional at every single thing. So it was fun to correspond back and forth, like almost minute by minute sometimes, with Francois about how the two of us thought we should proceed. And I basically used his template. We did some slight tweaks to it because we had equipment that was a little different from what he used. But basically, this is a Francois Villard wine made using Donald Patz as his Ratatouille chef.
Did you just call him a rat?
No, I didn't. I called myself a rat.
No, it's just, we're kidding, of course. This is really a very stimulating exercise. I was so enamored with Larousse, and this is such a different animal, obviously varietally, but also stylistically. It just delivers a whole other set of stimuli.
Well, we hope so. I mean, the difference between Pinot Noir and Syrah should deliver different flavors, right? I mean, if you just look at the clusters between, yeah. The difference in the clusters between Pinot Noir, which are like the size of a man's fist,
yeah.
And Syrah, which is like two men fists, one on top of the other. And the size of the berries are different, but there's a lot of tannin in Syrah. It can become too tannic if it's made without without an idea towards producing a subtle wine, a wine of refinement, as opposed to simply, you know, it's really easy because California can do that. I mean, that's the thing that California can do. And there's other warmer climates as well. You know, Australia, for example, and parts of Argentina and Chile also in their warmer areas can do this. You can produce a wine of extraordinary power, but, you know, it's sort of like listening to Led Zeppelin really loud. It's kind of fun for a short period of time, and then the ears start to ring, and it's not as much fun. So listening to, I'm not saying Led Zeppelin at a lower volume is better, but listening to other kinds of music at more moderate volume levels sometimes is more satisfying and can be sustained, let's say.
Well, that's very well put, and I am just really fascinated by how, after 29 years, we decided making of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay.
Oh well, so fair is fair.
A whole other
fair is fair.
I've known you for a while, and I know that you're all about quality and intent, but the proof is in the bottle, and here I'm tasting the finished wines, the finished reds for the first time at this moment, and there's so much going on in my mind right now because these wines are so fun. I use that word several times throughout the conversation. So in addition to all the collegial and kind of nerdy stuff that we've discussed, it's so fun to see your creation. You know, the product was went on behind your ears, I'm sure, or between your ears, excuse me. You know, this had to have been some agonizing, you know, projects for you, because, you know, this is something that, particularly with respect to Syrah and Cabernet, that you haven't yourself attempted. And this is the testament to whether it's going to materialize from conceptual to actual.
It's true. So Cabernet, though, is, you know, a wine that I bought in production, so I had a good sense of where it was headed. The 2017s have turned out beautifully as well, and I'm really responsible for everything from the start to the finish on that. But this, it, just to bounce back to the Terminum for a second, I mean, it's actually better than I had hoped it was going to be, to be honest. You know, you make small amounts because you're not entirely sure exactly what the results are going to be. And I'd never made Syrah before. I'd never made Marsan Rizon before, as I've said a couple of times. Yeah. And it's great to be able to try these out and then see how they turn out. And if you're happy with it, then great. And if you're unhappy with it, well, it's only 100 cases. So maybe somebody else can buy the wine from you and put it into their blend.
You know, this was definitely bold in many respects, and I'm continuously processing throughout this discussion what it must be like for someone who's so established, you know, in marketing wise. You know, people know you. I mean, they've come to expect a certain level of perfection because they associate you so much with Patson Hall, your name is on the brand, and then to venture into a whole new world, and clearly, again, fruit sources extraordinary, but still you have to perform at a highest level.
I was aware of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I really took it into consideration. I was very dedicated in 2017 and 2018, and I expect to every year, in maintaining quality in the vineyard. Because when it gets to the winery, then my part really kicks in. But if I don't have wonderful grapes to work with, then it's impossible. I was going to say it gets harder. It's literally impossible to make great wine out of mediocre grapes. You can make mediocre wine out of great grapes, and I'm sure that it's been done routinely through human history. But I think the other thing is that the phrase great wine often is overused too. I mean, the other day somebody was writing an article about, you know, some wine that they wanted to sell, and they were describing it as a great rosé. And I understand what their meaning is. I mean, they think it's a really great, it's a really amazing example of rosé. But in my mind, there's a lot of wines that never, ever achieve what I think of as greatness. And that's okay, because rosé is supposed to be a happy, fun wine that you glug down on a hot day next to the patio while you're grilling shrimp on the barbie or something like that. I mean, it has a place, and that's perfectly acceptable. It's a noble place, but it's not a great wine. Great wines have really distinctive characteristics. They have a sense of balance and harmony and intensity and longevity. And rosé, no, I don't think so.
It's really unfortunate that there's so much high pathos type language that gets tossed around for marketing purposes that we as consumers, and I certainly absolutely include myself in that.
I include myself too. Yeah, I'm a consumer. I mean, I love drinking wine. I buy wines from all over the world and enjoy drinking them. And
yeah.
But it's hard to listen sometimes to the, as you just said it, hyperbole. And I mean, if you would listen to what a lot of wineries say, you would think every single wine was, you know, world class, Grand Cru level, or, you know, and they're not. You hear the story, and the wines don't, you know, match up with it. It's just kind of sad.
No, it really is quite destructive. I must say that we get anesthetized to those terms, which are valid terms like balance and amazing, and because they're repeated so often, and they're, you know, they become almost interchangeable. And the truth is that the meaning is as valid as ever. But when there's no proof of concept, then it becomes a fallacy. And those people that really do a terrific job performing to that standard, they shouldn't have to suffer being lumped with everybody else.
Yeah, well, that's... So a lot of this is out of our control, certainly out of my control. I really focus on trying to make the very best wines I can, and then trying to explain what I'm doing and why I think these wines are special to those few people that are interested. And I look forward to continuing that as long as I'm around. I want to keep being involved with these wines, as you know, like I said, as long as I'm alive.
Well, given, like we discussed, a small lot of a lot of these wines, you don't need a large group of friends. You just need a meaningful group of friends that get it.
That's the goal. So should we try the Secret Door?
Oh, we so have to try Secret Door. I've been staring at the label, and You guys will see it. There'll be a link at the bottom of the podcast. You really need to go to that website. It's, you know, this is really an achievement in and out of itself. Even before you put your lips to the glass, this is one of the best labels I've seen.
Well, if you want to, unfortunately, the listeners can't see what you're about to see.
Yeah.
Here is the secret door, secret labels for 2017.
Oh my!
The two versions here. So we have a Sage Ridge label, and then the Hirondelle Vineyard label, Stag's Leap, and Napa Valley.
If Donna would let me, I would take pictures post recording. if that's not a secret, that part, and I'll post the image of the labels because you guys, you have to see it.
Well, the plan is to do a different label, a different door picture with each vintage. Mm-hmm. So that, so for example, you can see the Stag's Leap has got a blue door this year. This 2014 had a red door. It's a totally different door. That one is from France. The reddish brown door that you see on the Sage Ridge, that's from India. A friend of mine was in India and took a picture of it. And I've got all the details. So I'm pretty sure we'll put it up on the website, although it won't be on the label.
So here's a question for you. Would you be open to the idea of listeners, customers sending you a picture of a door for consideration?
It would be great, but here's the key thing. It's got to fit a certain kind of criteria for us. So it needs to be an unusual door. You need to take the picture pretty much straight on. Mm-hmm. I've seen some really interesting pictures, but they were from a sort of oblique angle, and it just doesn't work with the way that the label does. So it needs to be straight in front, sort of squared up. Try to include anything around the door that looks interesting as well. And sure, we'll take a look at it. I don't promise I'll use anybody's. If you send it to me, I'm not going to be obligated to do, but we will work out something. If I use your label, we'll figure out a way to compensate you in some way.
Well, how about that incentive? At a minimum, I'm sure I'm speaking on Donna's behalf here, but
we'll
get a bottle of wine.
At least
a half bottle out of it. But how fun is that to participate potentially? Again, no promises. We're not obligated in any, obligating Donald in any way, but I just think the fact that this is could be an interactive experience if somebody really captures a special door, they might wind up...
Well, doors have become a big deal. I mean, if you go on Instagram and start casting around, you'll be, if you haven't already, you'll be really surprised at how many accounts are dedicated to doors from different places around the world. So, yeah, some interesting stuff.
I have a sudden urge to look because now you've whetted my appetite. This is really very striking.
So it can't just be about the label, though. The wine inside has got to be special, too. And I'm really, tasted it again. Every time I try this wine, I'm really so pleased with the end result. And I'm hopeful that the wines that I'm creating for 2017 and 2018 can be of equal, if not, or perhaps even better character. But I'm really in love with these wines.
So we're tasting 2014. As you pointed out, lot secret 1%. What does that mean?
1Z.
Oh, 1Z, I'm sorry.
It didn't occur to me, but if you say it fast, it starts to sound like 1Z.
1Z, okay.
Secret.
That's what you were explaining earlier. That is the lot. And
Z lot, and there's an X lot. X and
X
Z.
X lot, yes.
There is no Y, because there is no answer to the question why.
There's always a story. It's like unwrapping, you know, a present, and there's a box, and there's a box within a box, and you just keep going. That's what it sounds like to me. So get ready, you guys. You get involved with Secret Door, it's a never-ending story.
I think so. That's the plan. Yeah. We have some really interesting stuff coming up. I'm happy with all of the wines that we were just tasting through here, Alona, but I'm really happy with the fact that it was the first out of the gate with these 2017s, and I achieved probably 90%+ of what I had hoped to be able to do with them. And that means there's still 10% to pursue. And I hope I never make the best wines I ever, I hope I don't know it when it happens, I guess, is what I'm saying. that I'll never make a better wine than this, because how disappointing would that be? For the rest of your life, you know you're not going to be able to perform at the level that you just did. On the other hand, I know that not every year is going to be better than the year before. It's just the way that Mother Nature works. But we're going to work hard, and every wine that we release under these names will be wines that I'm really proud of, and I think everyone listening will enjoy drinking.
Okay, can I just say this is ridiculously delicious?
It is pretty much ridiculously delicious, isn't it?
I just, you know, I keep gushing. And
I think we were talking about this a little earlier with regard to the style of winemaking. I think you can see what I'm talking about. This wine has this sort of richness and fruitiness, but it also has this nice edge that says, I'm Cabernet. I'm not just about blackberry jam and, you know, the essence of Jack Daniels. This has this herbal note that says Cabernet Sauvignon. And that's what I think is so intriguing about it. What I find so interesting, after 30 plus years in the wine business, what still turns me on is seeing wines like this that will continue to develop and will carry that signature of Cabernet Sauvignon going forward.
You know what? I get it after tasting it. When you first said, I do not want to make blends. And there's so many people that make blends, and good blends and worthy blends. But I thought to myself when you said that, why is he so adamant? Why does it have to be Cabernet? But now I get it. You really showcased what it can deliver.
It's a great grape variety, and it shines in the Napa Valley. So
yeah.
Why would you want to take away from that? I don't know.
You guys, seriously, you need to get this wine. If you were to pick one, if you could only afford one, I hate myself a little for saying it, but this Cabernet will either change your mind about the Cabernet as a varietal, will reinvigorate what you believed, what if you're a Cabernet lover, what got you there. You have so much fun with this wine.
I'm excited about it. And I, like I said, the 2017, 2018s are really lovely as well. So it'll be fun to try them side by side. I have a feeling I'll probably still have 50 or 60 cases of this done when I call quits on sales, just because I want to be able to haul it out 10 or 15 years from now and say, this is where we started. Remember this? This is the one that kind of got Secret Door rolling.
I would second that. Because I think, again, this wine has a long life ahead of it. But damn, is it delicious. I did not anticipate that. Honest to goodness, I thought this would be, given that it's 2014, that it would be young and it wouldn't be, you know, quite as generous. But it's giving with both hands. It's sexy. It's voluptuous. It's compelling. It's got a really long finish, which makes a big difference for me. It's everything and then some. And I would urge you, I would insist that you buy more than one bottle, because you need to drink one right away. That has to happen. But you also need to taste it down the line. I'm not the most patient girl, and I know that I would be tempted to get into it. So you need to have an insurance policy with at least one additional bottle that you can open at some point in the future. Well, thank you, Donald, for your time, for your candor, for treating me to this extraordinary lineup and letting the story unfold of what you started. I think that everything that you've described as far as continuing with all of those brands sounds very exciting, sounds very intentional, sounds very dynamic. I can't wait to continue participating in the beautiful creatures that live in your bottles. because every time I do, it reminds me why I live in the wine world. You make it very exciting and very stimulating. And to that, I say cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palate Exposure featuring Ilona Thompson. We'll see you again next week.